All right, guys, we're back here. I'm in Missouri, and we're talking about Missouri and populism and history and the presidency and fascism and the interstate highway. And we barely touched the Green New Deal. But yeah, this is, and I've got my sunglasses on now because I'm not on camera.
For my friends in the chat room, I just want to say that one of the reasons that I don't cut off Nomi because the chat room people love you so much that if I did, I'd never be able to go back in, okay?
Oh, Harvey likes to show up, and it's great, by the way. It's great for people love to interact in on YouTube, on our show, all the shows, all the leftist shows, and Harvey is a regular, so it's a fun addition. It's like a celebrity showing up.
Now, having said that, I'm going to defer to Thomas again, but I do want to say that I have the fantasy version of Biden coming out as a possible FDR, okay?
What do you mean? Okay. You think it's going to happen?
No, I said a fantasy version. Please note, okay? like I often think to myself, why don't they call me and ask me what they ought to do?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right. Well, maybe if
I want to know the answer to that.
You're not part of their consulting group. That's why.
No, clearly not part of the consulting group. No, you know, here's what I can't quite fathom, and I've been listening to you, Thomas, and some other things, and I think to myself, Nomi at first said, it'd be great you guys could debate. I said, I don't think we have much to debate about. I think we're pretty much on the same page. But here's the thing. Here's what I don't quite fathom. They made that announcement sometime after the primaries were over, where Biden said he was going to create an FDR-like administration, okay? And I don't know then if that Ted Kaufman, is that his name? Ted Kaufman, who made that remark that nothing, he was the one who reiterated the story, nothing's going to change. So I don't know if that was to balance off fantasies of Biden himself, though, who knows?
You mean nothing is going to change because he was caught talking to bankers just as Hillary
he's
was
also
caught.
Worried about the, right. He's worried about the deficit. Right. He's worried about the deficit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and which is to say that Stephanie Kelton, the economist, did not get through effectively to Jared Bernstein, the economist, to whisper into Biden's ear. That's telling, I think. But I've got this idea that at some point Biden may just actually wake up. Okay. And Kamala Harris is a very opportunistic politician. She may actually start demanding something out of him, where he's actually in the debate, just as he shocked people when he said in the primary debate, I'm going to definitely choose a woman running mate. He might just say, you know, we're in the middle of a pandemic. We are in a crisis that is unprecedented. Even I realize the imperative of Medicare for all. You know, that would be the only time we're doing it where he literally has the nation on TV. So that's my fantasy moment.
There you go. And I mean, wouldn't that be wonderful? And it is in some ways the exact moment to do it because it's like Roosevelt in 1933 as the banks are shutting down, literally as he's being sworn in. You know, this is the time to do the reforms. Yeah. It's the perfect opportune moment. I hope that too. I find myself hoping. I hate that word now. I won't use hope. You know, Obama poisoned.
Obama's tainted it. Yeah.
Yeah, he poisoned that for me forever. Yeah. And I often kick myself because when Obama came in, I remember having lunch with one of my liberal friends here in D.C. and saying to them, you know, Obama is not, he's not really with us. And my friend saying, no, but events are going to force his hand.
Right.
Events are going to force his hand. He's going to have to get tough with Wall Street, you know, because there's no other way to do it. He's going to have a gigantic stimulus program, you know.
This is the cautionary tale, right?
He used all of his brilliance and all of his genius to avoid doing those things.
That's right. this leads to interesting. I was thinking about you a lot of time to think while you're driving. You have FDR who had to respond because of the moment, right? The moment pushed FDR, if I could say, if I don't know if that's fair enough. And then you think of somebody like Johnson. So Biden is a creature of the Senate, as Johnson was a creature of the Senate. It's not like Biden is some sort of grand negotiator and pushed through all these amazing pieces of legislation. So, you know, there's that. But he knew he was going to lose the South, right? So he took a risk. Is that fair? Like the moment didn't push him. Oh, I guess it did.
Yeah. Well, hold on. Just I won't go long on this. I promise. But
we have no clock. Don't worry. We're good now. Okay. They're not going to kick us off.
First thing, most historians just get FDR completely wrong. Okay. And well, they get him wrong because they completely ignore the fact that he actually was governor of New York State for 4 years before he became president. And that was two terms in those days. And very soon after he became governor of New York is when the crash occurred and the Depression is hitting all the more fiercely. But, and he then began a whole series of experiments, all of which are then echoed in the grander theme of the federal government, in the TVA, in the CCC. I mean, he's already ready. He's primed for the presidency, which is what a lot of people don't realize. And there are other things that then push him, including John Lewis and Sidney Hillman and the labor movement. Okay, having said that, in the case of FDR, and I know Thomas realizes this, not FDR, Lyndon Johnson. Johnson actually had populist roots.
Yes, his grandfather, I believe, was in the Texas legislature as a populist.
West Texas.
Yeah, right? In fact, in some ways, he was pushed by Texas to move right. And the only reason he didn't move right quicker because of things is that because FDR was president, FDR made him the head of the National Youth Administration in Texas. Oh. He may have been the youngest FDR official in the country at the time. And he actually saw FDR as his godfather, as his adopted political father. So, soon enough, if you're going to make it in Texas, you have to go along with the fixes. You have to make sure you've got benefactors. I mean, and by the way, if people look very closely, and Thomas, please correct me if I'm wrong on this, his record on segregation is not a classic Southern record on segregation. He literally sort of he couldn't break with the segregationists, but he never actually led any kind of segregationist charge, as far as I know.
So I'm not a big authority on Lyndon Johnson, but the one thing about you mentioned Johnson when he signed the Civil Rights Act, saying that he had lost the South for 20 years or whatever it was. In fact, it turned out to be 50 or more. But yeah. Doing universal health care, Medicare for all, would be the opposite of that. This would be something that would win Democrats enormous majorities all over America for years to come. I think the only reason that Biden is really, who understands the mind of Joe Biden? Not me. But
Joe Biden's mind doesn't understand the mind of Joe Biden right now.
Well, one of the reasons that he doesn't, that he is so, that he's not enthusiastic about it is because he thinks that Obamacare was such an amazing accomplishment that, to do this would be to basically abandon his one great achievement up till now in order to reach for something that's even greater. But, I mean, and that is sad, that is tragic, because part of the great, the sort of Democratic Party myth right now is that Barack Obama was one of the Mount Rushmore level president, and for Biden to do that would be to acknowledge that was not the case, and so therefore it seems, but you can't do that to a nation of 300 million people just in order to preserve a myth. A partisan myth. And what do I know? I like I said, I've sworn off hope for the duration. I'll tell you what my thinking on it is, though. I mean, Harvey gave you the plus side. That's the nice way of thinking about it. The other way is, let's say Biden beats Trump and becomes president. The Republican Party is not going to back off of Trumpism.
Yes,
they're right. Not going back to being the party of George Bush Sr., or of Dwight D. Eisenhower. They're going to continue. Trump got them Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, Ohio. They're never retreating from that strategy. The thing is that the next Trump is going to be someone who's much smarter than the current Trump. Trump is a dumb shit. And a terrible politician. And the next Trump will be someone like Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio that actually knows what they're doing, knows how to administer things, would not be caught blindsided by this pandemic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so if Biden does not rebuild the Democratic Party as a populist organization, you're going to be going through Kansas tomorrow, I bet. By the way, know me.
Oklahoma, actually.
Oh, anyhow.
Going down. Oklahoma, New Mexico. I think I might be missing a state. Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's Oklahoma. I'm doing the Southern.
if Biden does not rebuild the Democratic Party in that way, along the Roosevelt model, then we are looking at a future of Trumps from here to eternity. And I don't know, and you and I don't know where that ends, and that is a dangerous dangerous scenario for the future.
Yeah, well, now I'll give you the nightmare scenario. The nightmare scenario is that
We're all on fire by next week I haven't raked my leaves this week, you know.
Wait, sorry. The nightmare scenario for that is that Arizona, where you're headed to, is going to demand that Wisconsin taps Lake Michigan to make sure you guys survive. Okay, that to me is a nightmare scenario. But no, the nightmare scenario that I was thinking of is that Trump actually decides that he's going to call for Medicare for all in the debates.
And how about add to that, right? He pardons Assange and Snowden.
Yep. and he peels off
and totally problematizes the journalists of America, where all their heads explode. They're like, wait, I hated this guy, and now, oh my god.
And then he says, see, Common Bank, I'm smarter than you thought.
I think he does have these moments of wisdom where he, or someone around him does. I'm sure Bannon is still in his ear, and well, from jail. Yeah. Someone, you know, Roger Stone's in his ear. There are two people on the ticket, without taking complete, going off on a different, on a tangent. There are two people on the ticket here. Everything is about like taking off a piece of this, a piece of that. And I think also about the future of the party. You have Kanye West, you know, for whatever reason, keeping voters of color out of the Democratic voting line or not voting at all. And then you have this guy, which is who I'm going to talk about on the show later this week, because I spent a week with him in Puerto Rico. This guy, Brock Pierce, who actually is on the ticket in more states. He's like a libertarian, white nationalist, techno, cryptocurrency guy who has been colonizing Puerto Rico for the last 3 years. And I covered him because but he gave Trump $100,000 a year ago. And I think there's something going on with that too, because he's part of this new like hippie vibe, you know, the cryptocurrency Burning Man types that I think are really about the future. You said, what's the future of Trump looking like?
Is there really a Bernie cryptocurrency, Bernie Bitcoin overlap?
There is.
I did not know that. I've never heard that before.
So this is a real thing. It's you know, it's the Burning Man crowd.
Oh, Burning Man. I thought you said Bernie Sanders.
No, but there is. There is, though. There is a Bernie Sanders overlap. So it's like Burning Man is you've got the Elon Musk crowd, which is what Brock Pierce is, and then you have the Bernie crowd, and you know, and I'm sure there's other people in between. But the same thing goes for like what Marianne Williamson was trying to keep the spiritual people away from being right wing. I mean, there is a weird overlap, and I think when we talk about the future of conservatism, the future of Trumpism, it's that. It's what are people under 45 like? You know, what is their culture like? They're listening to Joe Rogan, which I think is a pipeline to Ben Shapiro, which is a pipeline to Alex Jones. Alex Jones and Joe Rogan are friends. So we have to think about these.
But then they all see the light and they go out and buy a copy of What's the Matter with Kansas, which makes it all okay, Nomi.
Exactly. It's like when Fox News actually covers a real story and then it makes it all okay because they're fair and balanced, right? Yeah. No, we gotta be careful of this stuff. I mean,
on that note, in case we should run out of time later, I sent the two of you an email before and I was really quite serious. At some point, if you want to have us both on again, I really do want to talk about it's the simplistic way of putting it is I'd like to talk about the lessons of populism, but more importantly is what can we, history doesn't tell us exactly what to do, but I actually think the populists do. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be fun to talk about that sometime. I can't stay on as long as that might well involve the
I've been talking, let's do that. I've been talking about populism like all day every day for 2 months now, and before that I've been researching it for 2 years, and I talk about nothing else. I would love to have that conversation. We should do it.
Let's do it. Yeah. If you're down, we'll get it on the calendar right now.
But I also, the other part of the new project that I wanted to talk with Harvey about, that you, I don't know if you've had it. Oh, you have the book, Harvey. The part about the American Liberty League, okay?
Oh, yes. Yeah, sure. I've written about it. Oh, yeah, no.
I knew who they were, you know, but everybody knows who they were. But I had no idea the kind of stuff they said. in their pamphlets and their radio broadcasts, the eugenics.
Because now we're dealing with this whole eugenics, Stephen Miller, but you know, more specifically with the women in ICE detention centers who are having forced hysterectomies. They also do that in Puerto Rico too. So can you explain to the audience, just to recap, what's the American Liberty League and what are these pamphlets?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's the first great right-wing front group backed by the DuPont family and other big... Yeah,
and explain, these were the richest, absolutely richest men in America.
Yep, at the time, yeah.
And can I just, before you get in, let me just say one thing. They originally supported FDR because they knew that FDR would bring an end to prohibition. And they weren't worried about drinking. They were already, if they drank at all, they had no problem getting alcohol. They thought they could avoid any rise in taxes on their lives if you could literally start selling beer again and tax beer.
Yeah.
So they actually supported FDR at the beginning. And then, of course, they realized the New Deal wasn't exactly what they thought it might be.
And a whole bunch of others. There were all of these disaffected Democrats, and they all signed up with this group, the American Liberty League.
Yep.
So the DuPonts and their friends sunk an enormous amount of money into it. They had more. They had more of a bigger treasury than the Republican Party in 1936. And anyhow, so 1936 becomes the great ideological showdown of all time between these people who claim that they're defenders of a traditional Americanism, and then Roosevelt, who's supposed to be this, you know, socialist kind of figure. And the attacks they rolled out against him are just incredible. And they documented it all very carefully with this pamphlet series, but they had articles in newspapers. They were on the radio. They would pay for nationwide hookups all the time. And I was surprised when I went back and read these pamphlets, how much eugenics was mixed into it, how much denunciation of it was all what I call anti-populism, yes. Meaning that ordinary people have to learn their place. They can't aspire above their station. They can't insist on trying to use taxes to take away from the wealthy what the wealthy have earned, and in this way,
which by the way,
subsidize their laziness.
Yeah. Yeah. Which by the way, now that I can use the word, fuck them, because they never secured any grassroots following.
Yeah.
But they came to realize how ineffective they were, and they then started to underwrite the Southern white supremacists.
Oh man.
I think it was actually called the grassroots movement, something like that.
Southern White Citizens Councils
Yes, that kind of thing, because they knew they knew the Republicans probably could not beat FDR.
Yeah, but wait, you've got ahead of yourself, Harvey. So the Liberty League teams up, you know, they've got all these like Ivy League economists on their side, all of these great corporation attorneys, the head of the Bar Association, you know, it is the American elite coming together against Roosevelt, and of course all the newspaper publishers, yes, of America, and they come together with this really elitist argument, this repugnant argument against Roosevelt, and guess what? They lose one of the greatest landslides of all time. Yeah. Roosevelt just crushes them, and from that day on, the right wing in America never try that again. And instead, they come up with all of these kind of fake populist messages of their own, climaxing in with Ronald Reagan, or if you will, with Donald Trump. You know,
yeah,
Reagan...
Well, in fact, I don't know if any of them studied the past, but that's what the Tea Party,
yes,
was meant to be, the upside down of the American Liberty League.
Yeah. It's the same cause, but spoken as a kind of protest movement, you know?
Right, that's right.
But both parties do this, though, now. I mean, they're both on the front, they're populist. Behind the scenes, they're not.
I don't think the Democrats are.
I agree with Thomas. The Democrats, don't get it.
The Democrats separate economics from race and gender and identity, right? But to anybody who has half a brain, race and gender and identity are intrinsically tied, and getting people, you know, gender equity is related to having smarter economics, more populist economics. But the Republicans,
they don't deliver on this, and they don't even try at their convention. This year, I mean, we can argue about why this is, but they didn't even, you know, the Democratic Party, Franklin Roosevelt, happy days are here again. They're supposed to talk about the middle class, our great euphemism in this country for blue collar, and which is a euphemism for working class, and they didn't even talk about it. The Trump people, by contrast, won't shut up about it. It's like they've, well, look, Nomi, I've been writing about this for 20 years. I am so tired of it.
See, it's ever since the day he left my house 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
You inspired him. Look at that. All right, guys.
I blame Harvey. And then when I get canceled, when they come to cancel me finally.
I'm knock on some wood.
Harvey K. The guy you want is Harvey K. And his enabler, Nomi. You want to go after Nomi.
Oh, they've done it. Don't put it out there. It's already. I was thinking about that today. I've been so upset about the finances of the party and like, where are they spending the money? And it's all going to, you know, consultants. And this is what I've been talking about you've been talking about this for 20 years.
Oh, the consultants, yes. That's exactly right though, yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the thing. It's like, I'm so sick of talking about it, but I keep talking about it. And then right afterwards, I was listening to a podcast. Brian Stelter was being interviewed on Fresh Air. And they were talking about how a bunch of folks were, Andrew Napolitano was kicked off of Fox News, and how they said it was kind of this quiet, like they stopped asking him on, they'd cancel his segments. I was like, oh my God, that's what happened to me when I started talking about the money in the party. And I wonder.
But not with Fox, it's MSNBC, right?
It was CNN.
I used to be on MSNBC all the time, like back when Bush was president.
And I remember.
And then Nomi, something went wrong.
I'm like, what did I do? And then they do the hit pieces against you. And it's this ecosystem.
I don't want to be left out. I was canceled by the National Constitution Center twice.
Uh-oh.
Why?
Well, I obviously didn't want to hear about Thomas Paine and American radicalism, even though they had talked about it, even though the deputy mayor of Philadelphia was going to pay for the whole event, I think.
Wow. I wonder who funds them. That's, you know.
They're very much a right. It's a right wing front. It's not a federal government thing at all. In Philadelphia, big place, huge place.
I've seen it before. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Right.
Well, guys, we have a lot to talk about.
They pretend to be public because they're on that mall area, Independence Mall.
Right, Independence Plaza. Where, back to CNN, in 2016, I was at the convention and I was on a panel in Independence Plaza in that mall in Philadelphia where the convention was. And CNN had this outdoor studio. They set it up, and there's this fountain there. And we're sitting outside, and it's a sunny day, as beautiful as it is outside today. And we're in the middle of a panel, and suddenly we hear lightning strike, a huge gust of wind, and then the entire fountain, which was, you know, 200 feet away from us at least, starts splashing on us, and the entire set flips over while we are on air, and they go to commercial, and it was
the ghost of Thomas Paine. I'm telling you,
that's right. He got
craziest moment, craziest moment of my life on air. On that note, my camera did fall off the tripod today, so I feel like.
Okay, but if you're going to cut us off, I just want you to know. I want to thank you not only because it's always great to see you and talk to you, but also because I really, for years, have been hoping that Thomas and I could somehow get together again. So.
Good.
Well, this was fun. Now let's do it again, and we'll talk about historical stuff. More historical stuff. Not
all right.
Right.
Populism
for today.
We'll pick a topic because this is what we're doing in our gender panels. Because there's just so much stuff to discuss. We're like, okay, how do we talk about feminism and housing? How do we talk about populism? The history of populism. This moment is still a very big topic, but. Yes, well, that sounds great. I love it.
Okay. And if you do decide to drive through Kansas, give me a call and I'll tell you where to go to see the populist. There's no populist memorabilia. There's like one thing, but anyhow, I'll tell you where it is later, okay?
We're taking this crazy route. So we're stopping in Santa Fe and then I'm meeting my mom there and then I'm driving up to Colorado for a wedding. So that's this weird. I'm not even going to Arizona. I'm going to Santa Fe.
You know, Fred Harris lives in New Mexico. What's the big city there? Is it Santa Fe? Yeah.
Albuquerque.
He lives in Albuquerque,
New Mexico. Yeah.
And he's the last Democrat really to run for president, openly calling himself a populist.
That's right.
Campaigning in this way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a great man.
Maybe I can find him.
Yeah.
Maybe I can find him. That could be a great interview.
Yeah. Way, oh, are you kidding me? That would be fantastic. Yeah.
Can you connect us?
Today. Your mom was in the chat today.
My mom was in the chat?
Yes, she was.
She knows how to do that?
She does now.
I yelled at her because every day when I go live at 3 o'clock, I get a text message from her and it buzzes my, and it can be distracting because I worry about my parents, of course. And so yeah. I told her today, I said, please put it on your calendar not to text me in the middle of the show because I worry. And then she remembered I had a show. So she watched it today, clearly. All right. On that note, we'll invite you back very soon. Hopefully, right. You know, maybe we can do some regular segment. I love it.
You great. Got it.
Great. Good
thanks, everyone. Thomas Frey and Carby K. And thank you to all of our patrons for tuning in. All right, we will see you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Bye.